Welcome to Ripstop on the Record, a podcast where fabric enthusiasts and DIY gurus discuss all things make your own gear, with the occasional poor attempt at comedy to keep it interesting. I'm Kyle Baker, the owner and founder of Ripstop by the Roll, and we're excited to have you listening.
Hey everyone, welcome to Ripstop on the Record. I'm Jameson.
And I'm Avery. In this episode, we'll be talking about the newest pack on the market.
So we're going to get to that in just a second, but first, if you like the podcast, then let us know. There's a lot of ways that you can do that, whether you want to like it or comment or rate or subscribe or whatever. But either way, just let us know.
Yeah, help us by helping you and let us know what you think. So with that, let's get to the guest.
We're talking to the founders of Evolved Supply Company. So Darwin and Matt, welcome to the podcast.
Hello. Thanks for having.
Yeah, we're happy to be here.
So Darwin, I got to ask you, we're going to talk more about your DIY experience later on the episode, but did you know about Ripstop by the Roll before we invited you on the podcast today?
Yeah.
Yes, we made it. Absolutely.
I mean, I've not only have I used a ton of gear and stuff from other companies, but I mean, over the years, I've helped develop stuff and work on stuff with other people. So I've definitely known about you guys for quite a while.
Oh, that's great news. I already feel happy. But so let's talk about the company, Evolve Supply Co. There's a lot to unpack, and we're going to get to the Ranger and some other products and stuff later. But the pack market over the last probably 5 to 7 years has evolved quite a lot. It's grown quite a bit, and there's a lot more companies out there. Why did you all decide to make another pack in the market? And you know, we'll get to differentiations later, but first of all, why'd you decide to start down this path?
Matt, you wanna kind of start on that, and I'll kind of hop in.
Sure. I mean, I guess to start, I mean, since we're partnering up, I mean, my bread and butter, and his for sure, is making packs and working with packs. He's got all the trail experience, and I've got all the design experience. So naturally, it was like, okay, what are we gonna make first? It's a backpack. So that made it an easy decision to start with that as our first product. As you can tell, we're Evolved Supply Company, not backpack company. So we're trying to have a huge offering of different products in varying different niches. But yeah, that made it easy.
Yeah, for me, it was, you know, again, like I said, I've used a lot of different gear over the years. And something that I think that Matt and I kind of decided from the beginning was we didn't want to start a pack company. We didn't want to start a backpacking company or a quote unquote gear company, which is like why we kept the word gear out. I was like, oh, supply, way cooler word. And that was because, you know, myself, even though I've for years been known as like the YouTube backpacking guy that talks about backpacking gear. What's funny about that is like, I'm super multifaceted. And for years, you go like, look back on my YouTube channel, I've been trying to get people into bike packing. Like I started hardcore getting into that like in 2016, right when the channel started, try to make a lot of content, people don't want to see it. So I am kind of this all around multi-adventure. I'm known as the guy who has hiked like 13,000 plus miles of like long distance trails. But when in between those trails, I'm out bike packing. I'm out traveling to different countries and just having like, you know, your traditional like European backpacking adventure where I'm just kind of hopping on trains and city to city. You know, I love going out and trying new things, climbing, and I really wanted to get into pack rafting for a long time. So we really wanted to start a company that wasn't a pack company, that was a multi-adventure company, to where, you know, obviously, again, as Matt said, Matt having another company that makes backpacks and myself being somebody, again, that's known for hiking, that made sense to let that be our first product, but I'm sure as we'll get into, like, you know, it's the next product's not a pack, like, surprise. You know, it's another type of piece of gear to where, again, I think that our focus was really making gear and making products, because not just gear, for the all-around adventurer.
Thanks for going into that and describing more about your gear company instead of just another pack company. I think it helps really paint the picture of what you guys have to talk about later in this podcast. But I'm curious to know, how did you both get connected with each other, and how does your relationship work from Matt's experience with packs to your experience in hiking?
I had started a while back. I had wanted to really start personally producing some products. Again, I have, over the years, over the last 7 years, I've worked with different companies helping to develop some products. I've helped develop some apparel, some hard goods like water bladders, and some other packs in the past. I've done some collaboration and worked on designing some packs. So it kind of got to the point for me where, you know, people were constantly asking me, like, when are you going to start your own gear company? When are you going to start making your own backpacks? And for a long time, I kind of pushed that off. And I was like, well, why would I want to do that whenever I can do it with this company that I use? And then over time, unfortunately, like, I ran into some weird situations with some other companies that didn't quite work out in the long run. And I had a lot of stuff up here, a lot of design ideas. Because again, after 13,000 miles of, you know, beating my body into the ground and carrying bags and tents and stuff like that on my back, you know, I had a lot of input of like, oh, well, if I was going to do this, this is what I would do. I would take a little bit of this and I would take a little bit of this, and I hated this, but I really liked this. So that ball kind of got rolling for me at the beginning of 2021. I had been wanting to work on this a piece of apparel for a long time, a hiking top. For years, I went through shirts, and like, I went from like the button-up shirt to the sun hoodie to then like a mix between them. And I could never find like the perfect hiking shirt. It's driving me nuts. I'm like, all these shirts kind of suck. Like, this is kind of what I'm looking for, and nobody really makes it. So I went out to thru hike the Continental Divide Trail in 2021. And before I started, I had started the process of working with some small manufacturers to develop my own sun hoodie. And that was going to be the beginning of it. This is before Matt and I had even met. And I didn't know what it was going to be. We were going to probably put it under my other company, which is Outdoor Evolution. So we were just going to, like, even though we're not a product company, we're going to be like, well, here's a sun hoodie. So I went through that process, and then that kind of got the gears turning for everything else. It didn't really work out. Here we are, like, 2 years later. I still don't have the final product in my hand. It's really hard. For anybody that's been wondering, if you're trying to develop a natural fabric sun hoodie and do it in the States with U.S. made fabric, nightmare. So that's been my last 2 years. So that got rolling. And then for me, I had another pack design in mind. I had another bag design. And again, as you guys kind of asked me in the beginning, like, do you even know who Ripped Up by the Rules? I couldn't tell you how to run a sewing machine. Like, don't give me a sewing machine. I know nothing about it. Like, I'm pretty good at design. I kind of know where things need to go. But as far as like actually putting it through the machine, not me. I'm sure I could figure it out if I tried, but I'm not going to try. So I was kind of looking at somebody that had more experience with that. And then Matt, how did we kind of first start? Like, I honestly don't, like, I know when we first met in person and started like talking about maybe what we were going to do, but I honestly don't remember how we first met.
Okay, so the practical like aspect of how we met was our mutual friend Jonathan, who the Ripstop crew knows as well because he's been on the pod. I've been working with him. We've made stuff together. I was outfitting him with stuff for his trips for years, whatever. We're friends. And now he works with Darwin. So then naturally, I was like talking to him, and he's like, you know, Darwin's thinking like he might want a new pack. And I was like, okay, well, I'll send him one. And of course, Darwin doesn't accept free stuff because he's not sponsored, quote, quote. And I was like, all right, fair. Maybe you can convince him. You know, I'll just make it for him. Hell, I'll make him a custom one. You know, we'll see what happens. And he's like, yeah, I don't think he's going to do that. And the next thing you know, I mean, that's how we ended up connecting. And then we were like, okay, well, I guess we should just meet at Trail Days. We're both going to that. So that was last summer. Met at Trail Days, and we're talking during and after the event, and that's kind of how we formulated the idea to partner up.
Yeah, it's kind of like what you just said. For me, it's always like any of this stuff, it's not like I'm going to start a company and make gear for the masses. It's more like I want a backpack for me, not for anybody else, or I want a sun hoodie because I hate all of these shirts. So, and then it ends up being like, well, this is maybe an okay idea. Maybe we should see if some other people think this is a good idea. So yeah, it's a good point. Like I kind of just wanted a backpack for me. And then that's, I guess, how Matt and I met. And then that kind of got the snowball rolling, as it were.
And that's kind of how, like, we deal in the partnership too, is like I kind of approach things from like how I would work with another client who's wants a custom bag. It's kind of the same deal, but this time I'm trying to make Darwin's ideal bag for this exact purpose. And then that's how we kind of proceed with it. So like the Ranger was like, okay, well, this is exactly what Darwin wants for the pockets. He wants this here. He wants that feature there. He wants those colors. Like, okay, I can do that. So that's kind of how we go about designing these things. It's like he's got an idea in his head, and then I'm the one who's putting it onto the textile and making the samples and making the design part happen.
Yeah, and then I also think that kind of to what you said, it's been interesting to work that way because I've worked with other things in the past, like where I've worked with another designer or somebody. And then, you know, when that Matt and I first met, I was like, well, this is what I'm thinking about doing. And then Matt, having Red Paw, where he's making just purely custom packs to order, Matt was also really interested in doing a line. You know, Matt had talked about that for a while. Like it'd be cool to just put out a line of packs and still do custom stuff, but had the non-custom stuff. So that's kind of where, like, when he said that, and I was like, oh, well, that's what I want to do. Like, I don't ever want to do custom stuff. So it made sense to, like, well, you can still have your company, Red Paw, and we can make this new company together where it's this full line of packs and full line of bike packing bags and travel bags and jackets and so on and so forth. Where there's no real custom work done, kind of your traditional gear company, right? Like the ones out there that everybody knows. So yeah, that's interesting. I hadn't really thought about that until you said that is kind of how it worked. Is I was just looking for a backpack. That's usually how this stuff works.
Yeah.
Well, I kind of love it because one thing that I've really grown to appreciate about the cottage industry is that a lot of the items, like if you zoom out and you are a new user to the industry, there's a lot of things that look the same. There's a lot of sun hoodies that exist in some capacity. You know, there's a lot of ultralight frameless backpacks that exist with a big outer pocket. And the differences look fairly minimal if you're on the outside. But what's beautiful as you get closer is that you can find very specific items. And normally, like at, I shop at REI at the time, so I'm not going to put them down anyway. But if you're going to an REI type of store, then you're going to get things that fit like the median user. And when you enter the cottage industry, you can find like the specific backpack with like the one strap that you need in the one place. And it feels like a really minimal piece until you're someone like Darwin, you've been on the trail for like 800 miles and you're like, you know, this one piece that seemed really inconsequential adds up after 800 miles and I really want it.
That's what I always tell everybody. You know, like I remember whenever I designed a pack a couple years ago with a company, like it first came out, people were like, oh, well, it looks like this backpack. It looks like this backpack. And it's like, yeah, you know, to a point, a backpack, what else is a backpack supposed to look like? Like it's a tube with an opening at the top and pockets on it, right? Like it doesn't really change that much. But I think what a lot of people got to realize, and I was having a conversation with somebody the other day, is like, you got to look under the hood of like, well, what makes this backpack different from this backpack? Because as you guys know, working with all these different cottage companies, a lot of packs, like if we're just talking about packs, do look the same, right? But that's because it's like, it's the wheel. Like all wheels look the same. But like, even though all tires look somewhat the same, they all do different things and they all have different features, right? So it's really looking under the hood of like, well, what makes this one special or what makes this one unique and stand out different from these? What does this offer and what does this offer kind of thing?
You can't add a spinner to a backpack is what you're saying, right?
Oh, we can. And we will.
We can.
So Darwin, you mentioned that you aren't a big sewer, but you definitely have design experience. I'm curious to know if you have anything else that you've DIY'd, whether it's sewing related or not.
Yeah, lots. Well, to give you just a handful of things, if we talked about all of them, it would literally be a 2-hour podcast of me just talking about the random jobs and ventures I've went into. I owned a screen printing business for a while where I did screen printing posters and t-shirts and stuff like that. I owned a recording studio, so I'm very used to doing DIY recordings and music. I now own a media company where, you know, I work on film stuff. God, in the past, I've dabbled in so much stuff of making things. I've always been a maker myself, a creative maker. A lot of times, more in the, you know, in the artsy fartsy version of it, like music or film or something, versus tangible products. But my biggest one in design and working with tools and machines is I'm actually a machinist and toolmaker by trade. So I used to work in a machine shop and work on lathes and mills and grinders and stuff. So similar, right? You're using a machine, you're using a material, and you're creating a final product out of it. But not a whole lot with fabrics themselves.
That's one thing we've heard a commonality across from a lot of the makers we've interviewed is that their one hobby isn't sewing, but they were, we talked a lot about like being Lego kids growing up or having some type of other creative outlet that's beyond sewing, but still working with your hands and being creative. So I'd love to hear that.
Yeah. Producing something with your hands. And I think it transitions over really well, right? Like if you kind of can do it in one field, it's really easy to like transition to another field. Like it was, you know, I played music for years. I played guitar and played in bands for years. So then getting into recording music was like, oh, it's just hands on. But instead of playing the instrument, now I'm playing with the controls, right? And then that went from that to, you know, working on film and editing. Like I knew editing software with music, and then like, well, editing video is, it's different, but not really.
Right.
At the end of the day, it's like you're still cutting and you're still splicing things together. So yeah, I think it definitely transitions over well as a creative, like as a maker, for sure.
So, Darwin, I don't want to put you on the spot here, but could we get your sewing machine debut at Trail Days? like, can we get
my
you and Matt hooked up on a machine at the rooftop by the roll tent? And
I'll bring one.
That would be interesting.
That'd be awesome. We can give you like we're probably going to be giving away DZP wallets. Sneak peek to everyone that might be coming to Trail Days. We'll be doing some kind of kit giveaway, so we can hook you up with one of those, and we can, you know, you can see how the sausage gets made, so to speak.
Oh yeah. Yeah. No, that'd be fun for sure. I'd try my hand at it and sew a really awful line and get stitching all over the place.
Hey, that's good enough, man. I'm planning to bring one. Yeah, I mean, so why not?
Yeah.
Yeah. Perfect. Yeah. You know, speaking of Trail Days, we're gonna be out at Trail Days. So Evolve Supply Co. will have a booth this year at Trail Days. We'll have a lot of products. We can talk about that later if you want to, but yeah.
For the people who are coming to Trail Days and for the people who might have never heard of Evolve Supply Company before, can you tell us in two sentences or short elevator speech about what the pack, the Ranger 40, is all about?
If I can do it in two sentences, what will be amazing. So for me, you know, for years of using multiple packs, I do a lot of different hiking, right? So if I'm on something like the CDT, I want kind of that ultralight stripped down pack that, you know, has no hip belt, that has just a single leash over top. I want that 35 liter small pack. At the same time, I live in Arizona. I do a lot of desert hiking. I do a lot of hiking in the Grand Canyon down south where it's super dry. You're having to carry like 5 to 8 liters of water at a time. So I constantly had two packs that I was using, right? So I would use one that had a more of a padded hip belt, could carry more of a load, maybe had a Y strap. Well, when I'm on a through hike and I'm trying to go really light, go quick and hike big miles, I want something more stripped down that's easier to maintain. I don't need the Y strap. I don't need all that stuff. So the Ranger really came out of the desire to want a pack that was a little more modular. So how we designed it was I wanted to be able to strip everything off of it and roll it all the way down and have something akin to a 35 liter pack, which you can very much do in that. Single leash, no hip belt, but roll that extended collar up, still get a couple rolls on it, put the Y strap on it, put a padded hip belt on it, and now I have a fully featured pack that I can load, you know, 5 liters of water and go do a hike down in the Grand Canyon for the weekend. You know, I lived out of a van for years, so having multiple packs was cumbersome for me. So if I know that I have one pack that has multiple things that I can attach and take off and put on, Like that's really, I'm all about modularity in anything. And anyone that lives like a super minimal lifestyle and like, you know, lives out of a vehicle knows that. Like if you have one item that can do multiple things, that's king, right? That's going to save you space. It's going to save you time. So that is really where the Ranger. So I think that we always say that it's a, I think sometimes people get confused in that. And we say the Ranger 35 to 40 liter, technically it's a 40 liter because that's the full capacity of it. But I always say 35 to 40 because it can kind of be both. I guess any pack can be both, but we designed this one to specifically be both. It's not two sentences.
So when I first saw this pack, I had Red Paw's signature all over it. In a game of chicken and egg, and now that I know more about it, I can see Darwin's influence. I can see Matt's influence. In a game of chicken and egg, which one came first? So like when you, did you have a vision, Darwin, of what this pack was going to look like in your head and you could imagine it? And then Matt kind of brought the textiles in, or did Matt bring up some super cool ideas and you were like, honestly, I hadn't thought about that. That's awesome. Like let's add that feature.
I think it was both. You know, I definitely in my head had what I wanted. Like, again, I had designed a pack years ago with a company. So I knew in my head, like what my, you know, what I was looking for in a pack was kind of my perfect pack. At the same time, I had the whole idea of like, oh, well, I want something that's modular and I want to do little things to it. Like I want to be able to strap a camera clip onto the shoulder strap because I carry a bigger camera and there's a lot of creators that do and a lot of videographers and photographers that do. And nobody's really doing that. You know, if a lot of packs, you got to put that whole clip around it. It's smushing the foam. It's digging into you. I've had like literally bruises on my chest from using other people's packs because that little clip just digs into you. So it was little things like that. And then, yeah, Matt came to the table. I mean, some of our early prototypes, you know, were very, they looked very much like Matt's other packs, like very Red Paw style packs. And then I think it was just like kind of taking those two things and kind of weaving them in and out and being like, okay, well, let's use this because I didn't think of that. You know, Matt would say, well, let's, you know, little things like the way the bottom pocket is designed and like the trash hole, like any pack that I had ever had before then, I'd never used the whole bottom pocket thing. I was never a bottom pocket person. So like Matt really helped bring that in or help figure out like the, you know, the design of how the shoulder straps would be. So yeah, I think there was a lot of kind of, I don't know if it was really chicken or egg or if it was just kind of like two chickens making an egg. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it was a mix of both for sure. You know, he definitely had his ideas and I was like, right, how can we do that and kind of work with those ideas? And that's how we landed where we are.
Yeah. And I think Matt knows by this point, like I'm really particular about things. Yep. Mm-hmm. And for me, it's because I've spent so many years like living out of packs, living out of bike bags, living out of suitcases, traveling and stuff. So when it comes to gear design, like the little bitty, most minute things, like the way a seam is sewn are folded over or like the drain hole on the bottom of a pocket, like all those little things to me just, you know, is anybody that's like a long distance hiker or a full-time traveler will tell you like when there's nothing else to do and you're bored and you're out on the trail, you're looking at stuff like that. You're thinking about stuff like that. Right. And for me, because I am a creative mind, I'm constantly thinking like, ooh, why did they do that? I would have done it this way, or I would have done it this way. So I think whenever Matt and I got into it, like I think Matt is very used to, and maybe you can correct me on this, Matt, but Matt is very used to like somebody coming to him. Like Matt doesn't, I feel like Matt doesn't really have like a, oh, this is the way it should be. Matt's more of a, oh, how do you want it? Because Matt makes custom packs, right? Matt's going to make whatever somebody wants him to make. Where my brain is more like, no, this is the way it should be because I know that this works and this doesn't. So I think that was a really good mesh of Matt being willing to kind of like, I don't know, listen to my and put up with my like super critique of like, oh, no, that needs to be moved over just like just a quarter of an inch this way, or like this needs to, like that hole is just slightly too big. Can we make it a little bit smaller? Like, so little things like that. Am I on the hitting the nail on the head, Matt?
Yeah, for the most part. I mean, that like when I do custom bags for people, it's pretty much like to an extent, like I'll do what you want to an extent. Like if it's completely insane and I can't do it, I just tell people no now. there was a while where I didn't say no to people. I was just like, oh, okay, I'll do whatever you want. Thanks for the business. I appreciate it. Now I'm like, okay, no, can't do that. How about this instead? So yeah. With Darwin, it was like, okay, well, anything's somewhat, you know, anything's possible here, so we can make it happen. For my custom bags now, I'm like, I'm a little more reserved with just giving out, yeah, okay, sure, I'll do it. So I'm more hesitant now.
Let's talk about some of the features. You mentioned some of them. Let's go through the pack. On the Ranger, what features does it have? What can people expect from shoulder straps and pockets? And we'll talk about fabrics in the next question. But just features-wise, what does it look like?
35 to 40 liter main body. So it's a standard roll top. That's obviously the best design. It's the easiest to manipulate in terms of volume.
Snaps.
Easiest to pack.
No
we
Velcro.
All know that. Yep. Snaps and no Velcro. Yeah. So we try to do a lot of user-friendly stuff like that. That's not going to, you know, compromise your other stuff, putting it into the bag. On this one, we also, for the side pockets, we did encased elastic. So we have like braided nylon on the inside of those side pockets at the top to keep everything nice and tight in the pocket without having exposed elastic fold over like I normally do in some of my bags. Bottom pocket, the front pocket, those are all made from the Venom UL stretch mesh, which is tops. It's really good stuff. It's light. It looks great. Super tough.
It's tough as nails.
We're stoked about that. You know, that was a huge part of like our design was like, yeah, we need to use this mesh for a lot of reasons. And then beyond that, I mean, we try to do a really simple colorway. I mean, Darwin's always loved really earth tone styles. As you can tell, I don't always do earth tone styles, but that kind of made it fun for me to kind of switch that up instead of making everything orange. It's like, okay, black and Ranger green. Cool. I'm on board with that. So we use those accents for the webbing. We also had a whole like suite of stylized hardware too. So when you look at the bag, all the hardware matches in style. It's not all exactly the same SKU from our order, like our manufacturer, but they all look really similar. So we took a while.
It's also all very ergonomically. Like I think that for me, again, it's like, it's those weird little nitpicky things. Like most people are never going to look at or think about, but it's like, I've used so many buckles over the years. I've used so many, like, you know, load lifter buckles and like know how they feel in my hand and know the edge of them and know what they get caught on and like the sternum strap and all that stuff was like super nitpicked to like want these nice smooth corners and the way that they feel and the way that they look and all of that stuff. We is kind of like, I guess what I nitpicked on the features.
We spent a while on the hardware. We made sure that was right.
Quite a while. I mean, even down to the custom brass, aged brass G-hook that we put on there, which was kind of like a little signature, right? Like putting something on there. I was like, well, everybody has a black G-hook. Like, let's do something that looks different. And what Matt said about the colorway and stuff, one of the big things that I wanted to focus on is like, I personally like very subtle colors and earth tones. But also, I'm a bit of a romantic when it comes to the outdoors and a bit of like, you know, nostalgic, this kind of Americana for what the outdoors were. If I had some shorts on right now, I'd show you. I have like a big vintage Smokey the Bear tattoo on my leg in a national park. Like I love the outdoors, the essence of what the American outdoors are and what they were in like the 50s and the 60s, whenever, you know, the rise of like national parks and these long distance trails were really at their peak. And whenever I think of outdoor equipment, it doesn't look like a race car. Like there's so much gear these days that look, you know, it looks like sporting equipment. It's fancy and it's sharp and it's bright colors and stuff like that. And I like that stuff in some applications as well. But when I think of the outdoors, when I think of being on trail, I think of earth tones and I think of these like kind of blending into my environment, not like graffitiing my environment and being really loud out there, right? So whenever we started talking about colors, I was like, I don't want to do any bright, flashy colors. I want to do stuff that harkens back to like classic outdoors and like, you know, national park. Like when you look at a national park ranger, you see like the tans and you see the browns and you see the greens. And it's like, that's what I think of when I think of the outdoors. So yeah, I just wanted to touch on that. Of like, that's really why we went with those colors, is because I was like, well, I want something that looks different from everybody else, which is weird because at one time that wasn't different at all, right? Like, that's what outdoor equipment looked like. It looked like old an old Coleman lantern or an old Coleman stove. So that's really kind of what I took a lot of inspiration from, even down to the logo, where I wanted it to feel old. I wanted it to feel vintage, like something that, you know, comes from the outdoors past, basically.
I was going to say, you can definitely look at the work that you've guys done, the pack especially, and you can really see that vision that you just mentioned and how you brought it to life. And to touch on the hardware, there are some people who don't think or maybe notice hardware as much, but to me, the hardware is kind of like the shoes to the outfit. Like, it's really, it could make or break something. And you can tell, and I was looking through your product pictures, like, you can tell that you spent a lot of time on piecing it. Ooh, the influencer hand. Yeah.
Too much time.
Yeah. You can definitely tell that you spent a lot of thought and time going into those like minor details where maybe the average person shopping at another big box outdoor store might not look at it and be like, oh, I don't like that buckle. They're just mesmerized by maybe the color or something else. But it definitely shows in your work.
Yeah, I mean, we had these little bitty things, like some people, and again, some people will never notice it, but for me, like, I know it, and I know, like, it in my hand, and I get, like, how it looks and how it's symmetrical. But one of the features of the pack is that something that's drove me nuts for years is, like, companies will either offer, here's a pack with a single leash over the top, or here's a pack with a Y-strap. But it's like, it's so easy to take a pack and just put a couple loops on it and then offer like a removable Y-strap. Because me, again, kind of going back to my use, there's some times where like I don't need a Y-strap. It's kind of worthless to me. It doesn't do anything. But I might load my pack up and want to carry a big water bladder on top of my pack, where obviously having a Y-strap is easier. So it's like, well, what an easy fix. Let's just put a couple loops. Let's make a removable Y-strap that has some little gate clips to where you can take it on or take it off. So if I'm on something like a thru hike, a good example would be the Continental Divide Trail. For a lot of that trail, I don't need to carry a lot of water at one time, right? Like if you're in Wyoming, if you're in Montana, there's plenty of water. I don't need to do long water carries. So having a Y-strap, it doesn't really matter to me. But then I might get in a section of that trail where I am, say, going through the Great Basin, where it's super dry. I'm having to do insanely long water carries, or down in New Mexico where I'm in the desert. Well, then I'm going to need to put this water bladder up top. So just being able to like get in my bag and take out this one piece of webbing, it's got a couple little pieces of hardware on it, and attach it to make my pack then more modular and turn it into a different pack for a certain section. That's really why we did little features like that. And talking about the hardware, like those gate clips, and Matt, like they became a nightmare for Matt, and they probably still are.
Yep, they still are.
We went through a lot of those damn things because I was so particular into what I wanted them to look like and how they would feel and how long they would last and ease of use of, again, for me, like, cause I look at everything like the only frame of reference I have is my use case, right? Like the 13,000 plus miles that I've spent using stuff. And I'm like, well, I know that if I'm out on the trail, I'm out in the field, and all of a sudden I'm going to have to do a long water carry, and I want to grab this thing out of my pack real quick and slide it on. These little bitty minute things that no one that's looking at it's ever going to notice, they do matter because they have mattered to me in the past whenever I've like gone to use something or adjusted something and hated it. Or like, because, you know, when you're out there and you're beating your body into the ground every day and you're hungry and you're hot and you're tired and you're cold, like those little bitty things that can make the experience just a little easier or a little better are what really can change, you know, the outcome of your day on the trail, your day using that piece of gear. You want to make sure, for me, I want to make sure that the gear that I'm using is easy to use. It's a joy to use. Like, I'm not mad at the thing that I'm using. I'm not fighting it all day, right? Because I'm fighting myself and I'm fighting the environment as it is. I don't want to fight the thing that I spent hundreds of dollars on, possibly thousands of dollars on, right? So
just want it to work.
Yeah.
That's, you know, and yeah, those little clips, I just have to comment on them. One side is non-adjustable. The other side is a essentially a ladder lock, and both have little metal gates to lock them on. So when you put them on as the Y strap, it's not going anywhere. Like normally I would just use a regular G hook, whatever. And I've always liked those. I personally haven't had trouble using them, whatever. This guarantees that they're not coming off the pack unless you decide they're coming off the pack. So it just makes sense. It was like, it took us a while to get to that right setup of the two different clips, but they're perfect and they're light.
Yeah. You know, for me is whenever one of our first prototypes had, it didn't have the gate on it yet. It just had a G hook. Matt had designed this Y strap that had two G hooks on it and you put them on. So we were just all three G hooks, right? Like, so two G hooks and then a G hook in the front. And I took a bear can, and I hate carrying bear cans. Like, let it be noted. Like, if I don't have to carry a bear can, like, I will literally avoid a trail to not carry a bear can. I hate them. Think they're ridiculous, and there's plenty of other better options. Anyways, I digress. If I went to put that bear can on, I was like, all right, well, this is cool in theory. It's nice as a Y strap. It works. But I want to fully load this pack up. I'm going to put a bunch of stuff in it. And now I'm going to fumble. I'm in a town. I'm trying to keep through hiker mode. Like, I'm tired. I'm hungry. I just loaded up my bear can. I know that I'm about to like hike back up into the Sierras with like an extra 15 pounds on my back because I got this stupid bear can I'm going to strap to it. So I took the bear can and I went to put it on and put the hooks on. And I go to put the Y strap on. And as I'm adjusting the bear can, the hooks are kind of like sliding a little bit. I'm having to put them back on. And instantly I'm like, we can't use those. And he's like, why? They work. And I was like, but they could not work at some point. And if I'm on the trail and it's that one little thing, I'm taking the Y strap, I'm throwing it in the trash. Like, I'm done with it. So I want to make sure that, like, to almost future proof it. Like, so that stuff like that, like, doesn't annoy somebody or doesn't. Again, and all because like these are little things that I've nitpicked for years, and I know that would aggravate the hell out of me, and I would throw that in the trash, so it's not going to happen.
I definitely get that. I mean, no one wants to be like 80 miles out in the Wind River Range and like, oh, your buckle just broke and now you can't snap your hip belt together. So I've definitely seen people at that point. And it is, I mean, like you said, the trail is already breaking you down. The last thing you need is like the straw that broke the backpacker's back, basically.
Right. Yeah. And some other, you know, key features that we put on the Ranger were things, little bitty minute things, like the extra piece of webbing up here on the shoulder strap. Because I can tell you, me personally, I can tell you like two through hikes back to back. One of the through hikes, I had a shoulder pocket on my right side because that's where I like to put my phone. I'm not a water bottle person. I don't really care about water bottles up here. But I put my phone and my headphones up here, stuff I can easily access. And on this side, I like running my camera. If I'm doing that type of trip where I want to use a bigger camera, like a DSLR or something, I can put a clip here. But there's another trail, like maybe I go to do a smaller trail where I'm not going to carry a big camera. Well, I want two shoulder pockets. So I wanted to make that modular as well. Like, I'm personally not a big fan of sewn-on shoulder pockets for that reason, that sometimes I just want one. Sometimes I want two. Sometimes I don't want any. So we purposely, because like, you know, for people that aren't going to use a big camera, like cover it up. It's not a big deal that it's on there. It's just literally a piece of webbing that's sewn on to the shoulder strap. But the Ranger comes with that option to put that on there, or you can cover it up with a shoulder pocket. Because again, for me, like there might be a hike where I'm going to have a shoulder pocket there. There might be one where I'm going to strip it off, put my camera clip on there, and I don't want it digging into me. So that was another little modular feature that we put on there. And then the hip belt, right? Like I have used tons of removable 1-inch hip belts in the past, and they are awful and I do not like them and they don't actually do anything. And then I've also used some padded hip belts in the past that are removable that are just smaller and they also feel like they don't really do anything. So when Matt and I sit down to do this hip belt, I was like, well, I want to make the kind of the biggest, beefiest load supporting hip belt that we can possibly make that is removable, easily removable. So again, if I'm doing a thru hike, I can carry it in my pack and it's not cumbersome. It's not in the way. And then if I'm going to go into a section where I'm going to carry, you know, a ton of food, like I got to carry extra 5, 6, 7 days of food out of town, I can strap that hip belt on. I can roll it out longer. I can put the Y strap on. I can carry that extra food and I can have this fully loaded out pack. And then once that food starts going down and I get it to like, all right, well, I'm ready to be quick and ultralight again. I can strip the hip belt off. I can strip the Y strap off and I can have that pack again. So yeah, those were really key features for me.
Touch on the straps and the hip belt? We did not skimp out on padding, guys. Inch spacer mesh. It's 3/8 inch foam. It's fat. Like, it's a big strap. Like, it's comfortable as a result. We really wanted to make sure. I mean, it's a frameless pack, so that's what you're going to interface the most with, is that strap system and the hip belt. So it's padded. Did not mess around with that.
Yeah. And that, I mean, that comes from me being like super bony. Like, I'm crazy bony. So it's killed me for years. It's like some, you know, pack manufacturers will make just the thinnest straps. And I'm like, oh my God, like if I knew that, again, you have to think like it's use case for me. It's like if I'm on a trail and yeah, most of the time I don't want to carry a ton of weight in my pack, but there comes that time where like, I got to carry extra food out of town. I got to carry extra water. And now all of a sudden I'm packing 25 to 30 pounds in a pack that like its straps are not made to carry that type of a load. And then, you know, straps also, they foam breaks down over time. Like, they start getting thinner. So if I'm going to take something out on a 3,000 mile through hike, I want to make sure that like by the time I get done with that trail, loading that pack, unloading the pack, loading the pack, putting it on, that like by the time I get done with the trail, I'm not just like using a piece of fabric, you know, and it's making me uncomfortable for that last couple hundred miles. So yeah, we definitely made them thick.
And using that thicker spacer mesh does mitigate the problem with the foam, because if you've used a pack for a long period of time, you know that the one thing that will eventually go is the foam. There's no getting around that, unfortunately. Oh, yeah. You can go a very long time without the foam degrading. However, the spacer mesh helps that a lot. It does not degrade like foam will. It doesn't smush. It gives you that barrier. So even if you had like 5,000 miles on your pack, it's not going to smush down like the foam will, and it'll keep that loft. So it's A+. I recommend that 1/4 inch.
It's also just comfortable and it helps it breathe. Like, that's a big thing. I've had shoulder straps in the past that they didn't use great spacer mesh, and I just like sweat like crazy under the straps or the hip belt, which I feel like the spacer mesh that we went with is still allows for a nice airflow between you and the material. So
speaking of spacer mesh, let's get into arguably one of our favorite parts that we're excited to talk about. Why did you decide on the fabrics that you did? And if you want to touch on them, what fabrics you used, but yeah, just tell us about why you chose them and what you're liking about those fabrics with this pack.
So the main body fabric is EPLX 200 from Challenge Sailcloth. The side pockets are EPX 200. And those are our main two fabrics for the body and the side. And then Venom Stretch Mesh from you guys. And then HDPE Grid Stop. Sorry, I have to turn over and look at it to see. And I believe that's it. Oh, the 1/4 inch spacer mesh. So we sourced a lot of stuff from you guys. I mean, I'm one to do that already. And I was like, all right, well, these guys have what we want because I'm familiar. So that's what we ended up using. The reason we went with the EPLX 200 for the main body was a couple things. One, it's super light. It's amongst the lightest of the Challenge Sailcloth offerings. The water resistance is really good. Water just beads right off. And I know Darwin has a note about that. And then it's a great choice for seam taping. So we did a hybrid seam tape and seam bind system on this bag. So all of the horizontal seams are seam taped. And then you have a big U shape for the side and bottom of the bag, and that's all bound with grosgrain. So the EPLX 200 allowed us to do that seam taping and kind of add a little more water resistance on top of just being really light and just a nice looking fabric too.
Yeah, for years I used a lot of different packs with a lot of different fabrics, and like, you know, for years I was kind of on that same boat with a lot of people that are still on that boat of like, you know, you want something that's light, that is super highly water resistant, especially if I'm doing something, a through hike like the Appalachian Trail, something where it's going to be wet a lot, right? So the obvious choice for a long time was DCF. And I've owned tons of DCF packs. You know, for me, I had a lot of issues with DCF, as a lot of people have. Like, you know, it can break down pretty quick over time, especially if you're talking like a 2,000 to 3,000 mile through hike. I'm probably not going to see all the way to the end, or probably not going to see another trail after that, because it does start to break down, right? It's just part of having that fabric. But you know, your positives of it were, it can be seam taped. It can basically be like a big dry bag, which was amazing. So there's always these kind of give and takes. The other thing that I didn't like about DCF for a long time is I can't stand a bag on my back to feel like I'm wearing a grocery sack, to just feel like it's limping off my back, especially when I got a lot of weight on it, right? I like a little rigidity to my packs. Rigidity from a frame? No, but I think there's a way that you can take a frameless pack and make it feel like it has more structure to it. So over the years, I started using other fabrics, and you know, a big fabric that I fell in love with the first time that I used it was X-Pack, right? Loved X-Pack, designed and produced a pack out of X-Pack for a while. But you know, the biggest downside to X-Pack is like, well, you can't seam tape it. Like, it's phenomenal stuff. It lasts super, super long. I mean, I've put a ridiculous amount of miles on X-Pack and never had a problem with it. But there was always that thing of like, oh, if only they could figure out a way to laminate it. And then here you have, you know, EcoPack comes along. It's like, oh, it's X-Pack, but it's recycled. And I'm a big advocate for public lands and a big advocate for conservation. So it's like, well, that's logical, right? Like, let's use that because it's the same thing, but it's recycled. And then, you know, I didn't actually know about it. I do remember random quick little story is back whenever I was developing a pack and we were testing fabrics, I don't remember if it was you guys or if it was somebody else. Somebody had come out with an X-Pack that was laminated. It was a really early version of like a lamp, like what would become EPLX 200. And we tested it. We used it. Delaminated like crazy. Like, they couldn't figure out how to get the lamination to really stick to it. It was ridiculous how fast it delaminated. So it was always a shame that you couldn't do that. Well, then Matt kind of brought to the table of like, have you seen this stuff yet? It's EPLX 200. And I was like, no, I don't know what that is. Whereas, like, you know, somebody's figured out a way to take basically X-Pack or what became EcoPack and figure out a way to laminate it. So we can tape this. We can actually tape the seams. And then it got my wheels turning of like, oh, it's, for me, it's a perfect fabric because I know what EcoPack can do. I've put miles on it. I know you'll see like a lot of arguments back and forth of like, well, it doesn't have as high tear strength as it, but well, okay, well, I've put thousands and thousands and thousands of miles on it. I've never teared a hole in it. So as far as I'm concerned, it does pretty damn well. And like Matt said, really light. And just has a nice structure to it, has a nice feel to it, doesn't get weird creases and wrinkles in it and start looking like a trash bag. I can't stand gear that looks like a trash bag. It drives me nuts. So we started playing with the EPLX 200, and I still kind of had my reservations on it a little bit because I remember having regular EcoPack packs that, you know, would get wet. And even though they did a pretty good job of keeping water out, they would kind of, like a lot of fabrics, would saturate, right? And almost become like a little bit of a sponge, like the face fabric would become kind of spongy and hold the water in. And that's something else that drives me nuts, because if I'm on a trail, like for instance, the Appalachian Trail, where it's raining on me all day long, it's going to rain on me the next day. If I get to something like a shelter, or if I get a chance to dry something out, I want to get it dry quick because I don't want to go multiple days where I'm wet and then can possibly get cold and then can possibly be life-threatening. So it's little things like that that matter really hardcore to me. And in August, I had taken one of our prototypes and I went to hike to Everest Base Camp. And typically, when people hike to Everest Base Camp, they don't go in the season that I went. I went still in monsoon season, which I do not recommend. And for the first handful of days, we were hiking through the jungle. Because we started down low, still in the jungle, before you get to the more touristy part of Everest Base Camp. And we hiked through just torrential downpour every day. And what blew me away by EPLX 200 was how it shed water. So it would, the pack would look soaked, right? I'd open it up, it'd be dry as a bone on the inside, but the outside would look soaked. And I'm like, ah, damn it. It's soaking up like a sponge again. And you would literally just kind of like shake the pack and then have it indoors for like, I don't know, 30 minutes to an hour. I'd be like in a little tea house, like trying to get warm by a fire. And I'd come back to the pack and it would be bone dry on the outside. So I was personally super shocked by how it performed in wet environments. It was a really, it was a great thing that I went over and hiked in monsoon season, basically in the Himalayas, and took it up to, you know, up to 18,000 feet, like close to 19,000 feet, where it's freezing cold, it's wet, and it performed phenomenal. And then as Matt said, we decided to do this kind of wacky hybrid design on the inside on the seams. And as Matt said, we've taped all of our horizontal seams. And then the vertical seams, again, it's kind of like what we were talking about earlier. You really got to lift up the hood, right, to see like how something is made and like why it's different from this other thing. So something that I've noticed for years of having packs and hiking through the rain with them is I would always get water in the horizontal seams because the water starts running down your back, right? Especially when it's super wet and it's kind of going into those horizontal seams. So it was really important for me that we taped and we used the TNT tape, which is awesome stuff. Man, that stuff like stays on the fabric. It's phenomenal.
Cannot recommend it enough. It's super good.
Oh my God. It's so good. And then some of the early prototypes, like we were just messing with one yesterday, we taped every seam, but still like I would set the bag up to pack it and it would kind of like slump over, it would start to limp over a little bit. And that's something that's always drove me nuts about packs. And again, I want something that's got a little more structure to it when it's on my back, because at the end of the day, it's going to make it ride better. It doesn't feel like a soft, you know, a limp noodle hanging off my back. So we did binding on the vertical seams, where we did a one-piece binding, as Matt said, a U-shaped binding that goes all the way around. It goes all the way from the top, all the way down, and all the way back up. So overall, it allows the sides to have more structure and allows that tube, as it were, to kind of be more upright. So it was kind of like the best of both worlds, because there's a lot of people that bind their packs, and then there's a lot of people that seam tape their packs. So I was like, well, why don't we kind of do both? Let's like do the reason I would bind a pack, the seams, which is for the structure, and a reason why you would tape the seams to keep the water out in those certain points. So yeah, so that's, again, I think that kind of makes the construction of the pack at least different from anything that I've used in the past. Matt, have you done that on a lot of other packs, or is that something you'd
I mean,
say
not really, because
how we did it.
It's really just how we did it. Normally I just pick one or the other, because if I'm working on something like DCF or Ultra, whatever, that's just tape. There's no binding. And then if I'm working on something like X-Pack, normally it's that VX21 and you can't tape that at all. So it's normally just bound. So yeah, I mean, that the hybrid design is really just for us. I thought that was a neat way to kind of approach that problem and kind of get a little bit of both.
Right. And then the other, I wanted to, my controversial thing that I was going to bring up that I wanted to touch on was something, and I won't name other products or fabrics because it's not what I do. But, you know, right off the bat, I had a lot of people, and I'm sure Matt's heard the same thing with some of our, like, a lot of our emails that we've gotten for customer support and stuff. People are like, why isn't it made out of this fabric? Everybody else's pack is currently made out of this fabric. And my argument to that was, well, I haven't tested that fabric a lot. I don't know a lot about that fabric. Like, I know a lot about these fabrics and how they perform. And for what I'm going to use and the miles that I've put on stuff, like, this fabric has knocked it out of the park. So to a point, like, well, why would I use the other fabric? And, you know, there's things I've seen with some other fabrics that a lot of people are using right now that I'm personally not a big fan of, just because I personally don't know how it's going to hold up in the long run or what it's going to do in the long run, because it hasn't had enough miles on it or enough testing in those extreme conditions of hiking like 2,000 to 3,000 miles and beating it up and being in torrential downpour and monsoon season in the Himalayas. So it's like, well, that's why I didn't want to jump on the bandwagon of like, well, that's what everybody else is using, so why aren't you using that thing? And more of like, well, I know this works because I have put it through the ringer. So at the end of the day, like, you know, I know you guys are fabric people, like fabric testing and putting stuff in washers and doing all this stuff in a lab. Like, I'm sure all that's good and fine, but I know what it does. Like, I've put stuff through the ringer out in the field, and I know that this works. So that's what I'm going to go with.
I have a couple follow-ups. One, I think an important note to make about the EPLX as well, because I was also going to ask you about why you weren't using certain fabrics, and you partially answered that there. Yeah, you knew I was thinking that. But a big feature I would say is that, hold me back up. You often can find good budget packs, and you can often find, like, you know, no expense left out kind of packs. And I would like to think, not to sell your pack for you, you guys do that better than I would, but your pack is very reasonably priced, and EPLX does that in a really effective way. I mean, the Ranger's $250, I believe, when a lot of other ultralight packs that are going to have laminate or composite fabrics that are going to be taped, that are going, you know, have a lot of these other features. If this pack was DCF, if this pack was ultra or other fabrics, like, it would be well over $300. So, you know, you guys have a lot of features and it's still at $250, which I would have to argue has got to be a selling point for some people. Like, some people, you know, Carter's one of them that spends no matter what on a good pack because he doesn't care. He just wants the best one. And that's awesome. Some people do have budgets though.
Which is interesting because we've heard a lot of mixed stuff. We've heard the same thing that you just said, but we've heard a lot of people be like, it's just so expensive for what
it is. Yeah,
it
I don't,
like,
right.
Is it?
We get both.
Like, I don't know if it is. Like, you know, I think that just comes down to people not understanding, like, you know, how much it takes to produce something in manufacturing and fabric cost and stuff like that.
Yep. And it's all made here in the
US. I'm glad that you said that because that's how we feel.
Yeah. So we feel like it's pretty affordable, and for what it is, it's completely made in the US. So that's another big thing. I mean, if we were to go overseas, sure, we could make a really cheap pack then. Do we want to do that? Do we plan to do that? No, we're not going to do that. So that's why, you know, that's why it's priced the way that it is, and we like to think it's fairly affordable.
To speak to kind of some of our beating around the bush of like not using other fabrics, you know, one of the reasons for me is, you know, I spoke earlier about like there was a material that I really wanted, which was X-Pack that was laminated, but I found that it delaminated really crazy, or that it soaked up water really bad. And for me, like, there was some other fabrics, some really popular fabrics right now, that I've seen kind of both things happen. Like, I've seen some hardcore delamination with some of these fabrics over really long periods of use. Some people that I, personal friends that I know that are using some of these fabrics in the field. So I've seen what they can do, but like with EPLX, everything that I've seen is it's held up. It's held up for me. It's held up for other people that are using it. So that was one of the other reasons that, like, I think that for me, I wanted to go with that fabric, because again, it's like, you can say that, you know, at the end of the day, like, well, all the studies show and all the testing and the cut, all the things that you guys do to test fabric, like, well, this is stronger. But again, I look at things in the real world. It's like, well, I've seen this do this and I've seen this do this. I'm going to go with this one because this one seems like it, you know, is a little more iffy to me. Like, it's not 100%, and neither of them are 100% perfect, right? They're fabric. Like, they're going to break down. It's going to tear. Like, that's just what happens. But for me, it's really, you know, deciding to go with this thing because of its, to me, the advantages it has over the other thing. Not just because it's lighter, not just because it's cheaper, not because it's the hot new trendy thing to use in pack construction. It's because I know just from looking at it, my personal use case, like, I know that this is going to work. So at the end of the day, that's how I always personally want to design things, of what works for me, what I know is going to work, not just because, you know, Matt and I could save a dollar, or not because we want to jump on like the hype wagon of marketing and stuff like that. I want to use stuff that I know is going to work, because for me, I'm somebody that wants to make gear for people like me that are going to go out and use it in these like extreme conditions and for these long periods of time.
You know, another reason was design constraint too. The shape of the bag, to fully tape it and do ultra or DCF properly, you need to really fully tape it. The shape is not conducive to that. And
no,
and
we
like
found
he
that
said,
out early on.
Yeah, like one of the first samples was that I completely fully taped it. While I'm doing it, I'm like, oh my God, the factory is going to have a nightmare with this. Like, this is not going to fly. And I asked the production manager there, she's like, yeah, we're not doing this, Matt. Figure it out. You know, I was like, okay, problem solved. It's too difficult of a shape to really fully tape it properly. So that's why we did the hybrid design as well.
So Matt, I got to ask you from maker to maker about the tape. For people listening, you're probably familiar or at least have heard of the three different kinds of tape, two of which that we offer. And hopefully, I honestly don't know in the product line where we are with TNT tape. I know something we've talked about in meetings, but that, you know, I'm not in the products team. So, but there's, you know, there's our generic PET tape that has a fairly thick film on the back that's very cost effective. But when it comes to the overall longevity of the tape job, it can be a little bit questioned because it has a tendency to not be as malleable. There's a DCF repair tape that everyone's familiar with, you know, got the 0.5 DCF backing, the PET good tape. I've not actually used TNT tape yet, but I'd say kind of the benchmark that I have so far is that DCF tape. Again, from maker to maker, and for anyone listening that hasn't used TNT tape, how does it compare to like the flexibility of DCF tape? How it has almost kind of a stretch to it? Like, it's a very easily, it's an easy to use tape, honestly, like compared to the other options that are out there. What would you say, like pros and cons, you know, with those two tapes?
Yeah, I've used all three a lot because most of my bags are taped, of course. For a long time, I was using the PET tape, and that actually I made myself. So I haven't actually used your branded PET tape. I did that because it's just dirt cheap when you make it yourself and just spend a bunch of time. That's pretty good. It is thicker. It is heavier. So that is the one thing to note. You're right about the DCF tape. I think that is a really great example of a good tape, but it doesn't have too much flexion in the tape. Like, it doesn't stretch. It doesn't move that much. The TNT tape is, to me, the best of both because it does flex a little bit. It has the ultra yarns in it, so it has that kind of ripstop effect like the DCF repair tape would. It has that clear film like the PET tape would. And then it's also, here's the best part, 1¼-inch wide.
Yeah, it's a game changer.
That quarter inch, to me, changes the entire game. It is, because when I'm doing a half-inch flat felt seam, it's just enough to cover everything. Like, no question, there's no need for a second piece of tape to kind of do a little extra cover up. It is just done. One piece of tape and that's it. It's also really light too, which is kind of the problem I have with my homemade PET tape anyway, was it's heavier. And as I'm sure Darwin will tell you, I mean, I think the tack, like the adhesion, the peel resistance is a little better than the PET tape. I'd say DCF tape is, it and the TNT are about on par with that. They're about the same in terms of tech.
I've unfortunately had to use a lot of DCF tape in the past to repair holes and tears and stuff like that. I once patched an entire rain jacket that had holes in it. I was in Scotland and I had all these holes in it just because it wore out. I had so many miles on it. And I'm just like, it's just, I'm soaking through hardcore. So I just took out all the tape that I had in my little repair kit and I'm just like patching all the holes in it. One thing I'll say with the TNT tape that's been really cool, and because again, I'm an under the hood guy. So every time I show somebody the pack or I'm talking about the pack, they're like, oh yeah, that's cool. And I'm like, no, but let me show you this. And I'll like, you know, I'll tear the pack inside out to show them the inside and show them that U binding and stuff. I always anticipate that like one of these times I'm going to flip it inside out and like, it's going to start delaminating. And then I'm going to look, you know, like an idiot when I'm like, oh, it's great stuff. It really holds. Because I've had that happen in the past where like I've had DCF packs and I've, you know, pulled them inside out and it starts curling up on the corners, right? Like that tape starts to come off the fabric. And then you're either trying to, I've cut it off in the past, like the little curl, just kind of keep it down. I've taped over it. But the TNT stuff seems like it has enough stretch to it to where it, when you are moving it and bending it and stuff like that, it moves with the fabric, which to me is really cool. Like thinking long-term as well, when you're using a backpack, it's moving, like you're constantly moving it. Right. Even like if you talk tents, you're constantly folding it up and rolling it. So like that DCF tape is getting twisted and moved and stuff like that. So what's been really cool about that TNT tape and that I personally love is I know that in the long run, it's going to hold better because it does have that flex and it'll twist with the fabric as you're packing it and unpacking it and moving it around on your back. So yeah, I love that stuff. I think that's amazing. Anybody that's not using it should be using that or replacing, you know, whatever else they're using to tape their seams.
So to clarify, Matt, the TNT tape isn't a grid, right? So that way it's like a weave, right? So that whenever, because it's not just a straight DCF, because for people listening that may not be familiar with tapes, first of all, go check out our deep dive episode on tape and you'll know more about tape than you probably want to know, but it's awesome. But with the DCF tape, it's laminated DCF on top of the tape. So it's like the full DCF. And if you know, working with any of the DCF fabrics, there's zero stretch value because it's not how UHM WPE works. But this tape, Matt, what you're saying is the ultra weave is woven into the grid and then it's layered kind of like a woven pattern. So it's not across the entire, it's not taking up the entire surface area. There's only certain parts that are reinforced with the ultra. So there's still plenty of room to flex with just the whatever polyester adhesive they have or whatever the film they're using, right?
Yep. Yeah, it forms like a ripstop in a sense, but it is spaced out enough that it kind of has that nice stretchiness to it as well. So, yeah, I mean, that's the perceived benefit to me. And the other fun part is when we do that hybrid design of covering those top side, you know, that giant U shape with the binding, we're also covering the edges of the tape too, because it gets taped and then it gets covered by the binding. So the part right. that's going to peel up is normally that outside edge. So we're kind of trying to mitigate
those
that.
Corners. So It just overall makes for a nicer construction. And I think that, again, like with all those things, you know, combined of having those edges covered and then how that tape seems to flex with the fabric, it just seems like overall, like it's going to hold up a lot stronger and a lot better than, you know, I have my kind of main prototype, what's become my main pack. Like I have the newer ones, the finished ones, here as well, but I still use the one that I've put a ton of miles on at this point. You know, the one that went through the Himalayas, the one that went through, the Andes in Ecuador this past November. And, you know, still I flipped that thing inside out to show somebody and it's got all these miles on it at this point. And you cannot find a single point where that tape is peeled up. Like it's just not going to happen, which makes me love it even more and happy that we use that in our pack construction.
So I have one last final fabric question for you. You mentioned testing the pack in these places, like you just said, in the Andes and the Himalayas. And you previously mentioned already a little bit about how it held up under rainy conditions. And one question I've gotten a lot, because it's a newer fabric that we've released in the past year, is the Ultralight Venom Stretch Mesh. So how would you say that that's holding up, especially because you have it as a bottom pocket, and that's an area of a backpack that you're going to see a lot of wear, especially if, like you said, you're in Arizona, you're throwing it down on rocks, you're throwing it. Mm-hmm. I mean, that is one of the highest areas, especially if you're picking and setting your pack up and down throughout the day. But how is that Venom Stretch Mesh holding up? I know a lot of people have asked specifically how it works, because they want to know if they should add it to their pack for a through hike and what the longevity of that mesh is going to look like on the pack.
I mean, I think it's phenomenal. It's, you know, it's been kind of pulled along and set down on tons of granite all through all through the Himalayas, going, I mean, Everest, right? Like Everest base camp. Like so it's been on some pretty gnarly stuff through there. You know, I've used it as, it's become a carry-on bag for tons of traveling that I've done. It you know, being jammed up into the overhead compartment. And then, because I am in Arizona, I do a lot of hiking in the desert in super rough, dry environments. A good example is 2 weeks ago, I went down to do a section of the Arizona Trail, part of the Arizona Trail, and then we went up into the Superstitions, into the wilderness, and just did some kind of off-route stuff. We went this massive burn area that was nothing but, literally, I can show you guys a video of a buddy of mine got ripped to shreds because of thorns. There was tons of thorns and cat claw and stuff. So I'm going through massive thorn patches, and like, I can't, if I had the pack here right now and showed it to you, you can't find a single, what's it called, Matt? Picking, right? Like whenever the
peeling,
yeah.
Or
so there's, yeah, peeling. Yeah. So there's not a single in any of my mesh on the bottom, especially, which has shocked me, because again, keep in mind, I've used all these packs over the years. I've never done the bottom pocket thing. This is kind of a first bottom pocket for me. And now I'm a massive fan, right? Like totally in love with it. Mainly for the trash hole, because I constantly pick up trash on the trail when I'm hiking to pick up after other people. So I love just being able to jam it in there and then empty it out at the end of the day. But it's held up phenomenal. I mean, I've stretched the hell out of it. I've drug it against granite rock. I've went through thorn patches with it. Anyone that is a Southwest person and knows what cat claw is, it is one of the worst things in the world. It destroys you. And again, going back to kind of what we were talking about, it's like, for me, it's taking stuff out. It's really beating it up in what I would normally do with it. And then being like, all right, is this worth it to use or is it not worth it to use? So taking it out through all these environments and beating it up and knowing that it still doesn't have a pick or a peel in it, like, oh, perfect. Like, that's what I want to go with. Like, I wouldn't, if something new came out on the market right now that was lighter, stretchier and somehow meshier, I don't know what that means, I would still want to go with it because I know, like, okay, well, I put it through this type of environment. I put it through this type of environment. I put it through this type. So if I'm going to use a pack for something like a 3,000-mile through hike of the Continental Divide Trail, and I'm going to go through these different environments, it's going to be wet. It's going to be on granite. It's going to be in the desert. It's going to have cat claw. It's going to have thorns. I know that it's going to last me to the end versus some of the other stuff. So yeah, me personally speaking to it, I love that stuff. It's fantastic. It's just held up great.
Top one mesh by far. Yeah. I mean, you know, I've used a lot of these meshes. If you can name a mesh, I probably used it. I like a lot of them. Venom UL Stretch, top one. Yeah, and I'm serious.
It's super good stuff.
Yeah. I mean, if you're looking for point of improvement, the only thing is double the stretch. That's it.
Yeah.
I know that's really hard to do with the UHMWPE fibers in it. I get it. That's the only thing I would change. Otherwise, it's like the ripstop capability of that. If you cut a hole in it, whatever, it is awesome.
We did that too. Whenever Matt and I were first talking about the fabric, and I was like, well, like if you tear a hole in it, what will it do? And Matt took a piece and like, I think we were on like
razor
a
blade.
FaceTime meeting or something. Yeah. You took a razor blade and just slit it. And like, obviously it cut open, but then there was that like extra layer underneath, still had some threads and some grid holding it together where it wasn't a total hole. And I was like, perfect. When I was on the CDT,
the fibers, what's holding it together.
Yeah. So when I was out on the CDT in 2021, I mean, I have the pack that I finished the CDT with still. And it's just like, I've sewn so many holes in the mesh that was on the outside of it, just because of like crawling under barbed wire fences and stuff like that, that you battle with on the CDT, you know, getting it snagged on something. So that was a big thing for me. I was like, well, let's take it and let's cut it and let's see what it does. Like, I want to see if it completely opens up a hole to where I'm going to have to sew it at the end of the day whenever I'm tired in my tent, or if at least there's something there that's going to hold it together. And yeah, just all those little capabilities, all those little bitty features and those little things that, again, as we keep saying, most people would not even think about it. It'd be like, oh yeah, what's cool? What's light? What looks good? It's like, no. Like, I want something that I know that no matter what I put it through, it's going to like come out the other side and I'm not going to have to mess with it more in the field. And like, you know, that Venom UL has just been, I'd put it on a pack. I'd put it on anything, any day, just because I know that it'll last.
Well, it's no compromise because it's all those other things too. It's also light. It also looks good and it just works. It's durable. Yeah.
But I agree, Matt. I could use a little more stretch in it. Maybe not for my bottom pocket, but for the main outside pocket. Sometimes I do like jam quite a bit in there, and like it having just a little bit more stretch would be nice. But for what it is and what it does, like pretty amazing.
You've utilized the term like flexible minimalism really well with your pack as well. I mean, considering it's definitely an ultralight pack, I don't remember the exact weight, but it's within a pound or like
16 ounces, I'm pretty sure.
Right at okay. 16 ounces.
Yeah. So it's up there with pretty much any other ultralight pack that you would want to get without sacrificing many of those comfort features at all. I mean, that ultralight Venom stretch mesh is definitely lighter compared to other UHMWPE woven meshes out there, but you know, it's not, there are lighter meshes you could have, but you, choosing the durability you did, choosing the fabrics you did, the hardware, the brass G-hook, some people might have a problem with that from an ultralight standpoint, but you haven't really sacrificed.
It's wider anything. Than aluminum.
Oh,
most
it is.
Aluminum
yeah, it's aluminum alloy called Duralumin. It looks super looks light.
That's awesome.
Oh, trust me, I wasn't going to put brass on there. Yeah. I wasn't going to do that. We want the look, but we don't want the weight.
Yeah.
We had those completely custom made too.
That's awesome.
I believe we were the only people that have those.
I love that. I love that a lot.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. That's a phrase that Carter likes to use, kind of flexible minimalism of finding comforts while still maintaining kind of the ultralight ethic. And I feel like you guys have balanced that really well. So the pack's awesome. The pack is out or is available for pre-order and whatnot now. So we wanted to really plug that. But as we mentioned earlier in the show, Evolve Supply Company is not a backpack company strictly, and the pack is not the only product that you all will have or have even teased a little bit. Can we start to look down the tunnel a little bit and start to tell what sort of products you guys have coming next?
I'm pretty sure he's going to get the sample of the Ape Man, but the next thing will be a bike packing bag. Is that what you were grabbing, the Ape Man?
Oh, yeah, grabbing the Ape Man. So, yeah, so... I didn't hear the end of that because I ran away, but
you got the gist of it.
I would assume that you're asking what we were working on next. So again, for me, I'm a big time cyclist as well. It's funny, again, people know me for backpacking and hiking. My first love, bikes. I've been on bikes since I was a kid. I used to race bikes. I raced triathlon for 8 years and big into bike packing. I've worked in bike shops. So for me, doing the second product, I was like, well, again, as we've said, like, we're not a pack company. I was never intending to make like a full line of backpacks and have a day pack and a this pack and a that pack, because there's so many great companies out there that are doing that. So the next logical product for me is like, okay, well, not only do I use backpacks while I'm hiking, I'm also using bike bags, which is a completely different thing. So I want to put my spin on that as well. So the second product that I wanted to do was a bike bag, was a handlebar bag that could also be used as a seat bag. So this is the first prototype, which it's going through a lot of changes right now. So this will look quite a bit different, wouldn't you say, Matt, with like what we'll be showing next?
A lot of stuff is going to change, and I guess we can say it, but we're adding some magnetic closures to it as well. There's going to be some updates. Am I not allowed to spoil?
No, you can spoil. This is an okay place to spoil, I feel
okay.
Like. So I wanted, a classic, what's called a randonneur bag, kind of the classic bike. You look at go back and again, like we try to harken back to that like Americana of adventure, right? Like that classic throwback nostalgic adventure. Go back and look at a lot of old bike touring bags where people are, riding around Europe or riding from this end of the country to that end of the country. And this is a very classic bag design that's been around for a long time. With that being said, we really wanted to kind of give it this classic look and feel, but also put like a new tech spin on it. So just to kind of show you like, how these bags work is basically it's a handlebar bag. So the back, it just uses these Vole straps and then it goes around your handlebars, or it can use the smaller straps and go around, usually like on a lot of the leather bike saddles, like a Brooks saddle. There are two little holes in the back. Those are made for randonneur bags. Any Brooks saddle you ever find, next time you look at a bike saddle, you'll see them now. They were always made to attach a bag like this. So these move in, can go on the back, and it can become a seat pack as well. But so super simple design, something that you can take off that has loops on the side to where you can put a shoulder strap. And again, you're on a bike tour, you want something that's modular. I want something I could put on my bike, have the bike carry it. But if I'm in, say, something like Great Britain. Last year, I did a big bike tour of Great Britain. I rode from Land's End, 800 miles up to John O'Groats. So all through all through England, all through Scotland. And at the end of the day, when I'm locking my bike up behind like an old pub and I'm sleeping up above the pub, like renting a room for the night, I want to be able to take my bag off and take it in. So being able to take that off the handlebars and then have a, I don't have it on here now, but a shoulder strap, and throw that on and be able to use it like as a duffel bag, basically, is really important in bag design like this, to have something that you can take on and off, because you're not always, you know, most of the time it's on your bike, but there's other times where you don't have your bike with you. And then, you know, the classic, again, there's those awesome G hooks, that we got custom made, but something like this is, you know, it's a simple compartment over the top, with a leash and a roll top collar. So very similar to a backpack, just designed for a bike to hold it. And then one big opening on the inside, you know, your side pockets. But this fabric, Matt, do you want to talk about the fabric? Because this fabric is like, talking about, you guys are fabric nerds. This is something that as soon as I saw it for the first time, I absolutely fell in love with it. Because as we were talking about, it's like we want to use stuff that has a classic look and design to it, but be modern and have modern tech to it. And this stuff is, well, I'll let Matt take over from here.
The Duck Cotton X10. Pretty sure that's the name for it. It's from Dimension Polyant. It has that nice diamond weave like all the other X-Pack fabrics that you know and love, but it looks like waxed canvas. It is so cool.
So
I mean, the
nice.
Feel is so good. And then the inside, we're using the 200D or 210D Robic nylon from you guys in green. Yeah, you can see that laminated PET face on the inside. It's a cool mix.
So it's like, it looks classic on the outside, but modern on the inside, which is really cool.
I'm so jealous, like, just to be straight up, like, I'm geeking out at this fabric as a spectator here, because that's not a fabric that we carry, so it's not a fabric that I have worked with, so I might need to go figure out where to source them from the black market or something. But I love that balance. I mean, I did mention it earlier in the backpacks, and I'm kind of glad I didn't to save it for this, but I love the essence of kind of what you're doing aesthetically with it being very traditional. I'm on the side of kind of like less race car, more like natural tones. Like I like to wear my hiking clothes just on normal day life as well. Like I don't like having a lot of things that I only like keep in the closet for like the three times I backpack every year. Like this
you're
is my merino
jacket we're working on.
I want to talk about that next, but like, you know, this is my merino pullover that like I wore, you know, I wore camping, I wore hiking, I wore it skiing last month, and like it's just a Friday at work and I'm wearing it because I like it and it's comfortable. So, but I love how your gear is also fitting that bill. Like that's a bag that I would totally throw on my 89 Rockhopper just to like go to the grocery store and also like pack out for something.
Now you're talking
that balance.
I used to have an 89 Rockhopper too.
I feel like we could be the 8-man is maybe the one I'm most excited about because I got into bike packing last year. So when I saw you guys were starting to do bike stuff, I was like, man, I can't wait to ask Darwin. But I also don't want to be here for 9 hours. So I had to temper that.
Well, what's also been awesome is like, and that's the thing is I've watched this cool transition is I was into bike packing a long time ago and into doing a lot of stuff, just bike touring before I even got into bike packing, like traditional rack and pannier. And then what's been really cool is over the last couple years to watch it shift and watch like all these, and especially through hikers, like so many people I know that were long distance hikers are now like, well, what do I do when I don't want to through hike? Or like this route sounds super fun, but there's road and there's gravel and there's dirt and stuff. And it's like, oh, well, I can take my same gear that I have. I can put it in a different bag, strap it to a bike, and I can ride it and turn it into a completely different adventure. So it's been really cool for me being somebody that was a big time advocate for bike touring and bike packing to see like the through hiking culture embrace it. And so many through hikers and backpackers and stuff going over to it and realizing like, oh, it's the same thing, but I can kind of switch it up and like change it in these little minute ways and have a different type of adventure. So yeah, that was a bag that I really out of the gate, I was like, you know, I got a lot of backpack designs in my brain, like I want to make sure the second one is a bikepacking bag because I know like there's a lot of people that want to get into cool bikepacking bags as well, and go down that road. So that's where this one came out of.
This mic edited out. I'm just going to ask it anyway. Darwin, what bikes do you ride? Because if you're a bike guy, you probably have more than one, right?
I do, but right now is actually a sad time in my life. I only have two, which is like at one time I owned 8 bikes. So like owning 2 bikes, people are like 2 bikes, that's a lot. I'm like, no, it's not.
It's pretty good. You're doing very well.
Bikes are just like backpacks, right? It's like different tool for a different job. Like if I'm going to go mountain biking, I want this bike. If I'm going to go bike packing, I want this. Bike touring, I want this. So right now I'm a big, I ride Kona. I'm a big Kona guy. Mm-hmm. My main rig right now is a fully custom, 2019 Kona ST Rove.
Yep.
So it's a steel frame. It's a bike they've been making for years called the Rove, but literally the only thing that's stock on the bike is the frame. I used to work at a shop, and once you work at a bike shop, it ruins you for the rest of your life. Can't own a stock bike.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's my main touring rig. That's what I took to Great Britain last year for that bike tour. And then, I have a steel hardtail mountain bike, which is also a Kona, the Hanzo. Which is one of my all-time favorite trail bikes.
So I was like, as you were talking about bikes and your style and stuff, and like trying to build this vision of what your bikes would be. And I was definitely guessing steel. I didn't guess Kona in my head, but I was like, I bet he's a steel guy.
I was a big Surly guy for a long time. Yeah. And I rode nothing but Surly. And then I worked at a Kona shop, or we sold Surly as well, but I really fell into Kona just because of the type of company they are.
Yeah.
They're big time. They're riders. They're not like just designers sitting back making bikes, and they don't care about racing and they don't care about any of that stuff, which was refreshing for me because I was a semi-professional triathlete for 8 years. So I rode super lightweight, high end carbon fiber TT bikes and stuff. Right. So yeah. So steel is, anybody knows, like, you know, I guess I'll say this to end it, like, steel is real. It's just got this feel to it. You feel connected to the bike, where, you know, carbon and aluminum can sometimes feel like you're riding a toy. Steel feels like you're riding a machine, and it's, you know, it just kind of adds to that experience, I think.
Yeah. So I'll get us back on track. And if you want to hang out after the pod, we can keep talking about bikes. But as it pertains to Evolve Supply Co., the 8-man's coming out. What else can you tease for the people of what maybe is to come, or what they can look forward to seeing at Trail Days?
That's a good question. So like I said earlier in the podcast, the first product that started any of this was a sun hoodie. When I said hiking top, I had this certain design in mind for a sun hoodie and something that would be a little bit different and last. So that I've literally been working on this for almost 3 years now, and we're finally about to get it over the finish line, and I'm really excited about it. I just got another prototype, another sample 2 days ago. So it's for everyone that like has literally heard me personally on my YouTube videos and then on Outdoor Evolution, my other company, and now on Evolve talk about a sun hoodie. I swear to you, it is a real thing. I swear to you, it is coming, and it is very sweet. So that is one thing that we hope to have at Trail Days, to be not, it's either going to be to where you'll be able to order it, so kind of like see a try them on and get a feel for them and stuff like that. And then order it, like do a pre-order when it does drop. But the plan as of right now is to have them in hand to have for sale at Trail Days. So the sun hoodie's coming, very soon. It'll actually probably drop before Trail Days, but then we'll probably have them at Trail Days. We are currently internally working on a couple other bags right now. So another pack, that people have been asking about, a little bit bigger literage, a little bit more carrying capability as far as comfort, some features that, you know, some people aren't as ultra light. Some people aren't ready to cross into that world yet. So a lot of people still want a bit of frame. A lot of people still want a bit of padded hip belt. So Matt and I are currently working on that. Some kind of everyday bags that we've been talking about. Again, like I'm a big time traveler in April. I'm headed to Spain for 2 weeks and going down to Morocco. So I spent a lot of time on planes. I spent a lot of time just doing the classic European backpacking and, you know, train hopping and staying in hostels and stuff. So having those kind of carry-on bags, having those side sling bags, we're kind of messing with some stuff right now, prototyping a couple of those types of bags. And then the big one that I have been working on heavily is another project that I've been doing for quite some time, kind of like the sun hoodie, that is a co-branded product, and that is a jacket that we're doing. So something I wanted to do from day one, something that's always drove me nuts about the gear industry, and everybody out there that owns a cottage company, take notes on this, is nobody that I know, have ever known, we'll just use backpacking for an example, has ever gone on a thru hike and used gear from the same company, as far as like the pack, the quilt, the tent, the everything made by one cottage company. People typically want this type of tent, and they want this company's pack, and they want this company's quilt. So I was like, well, if that's how the community sees it, and that's how the community wants it, wouldn't you want a piece of gear that was like your two favorite companies making a piece of gear together and doing a co-branded product? You know, in the beer industry, it's super common in a lot of other industries, the EDC, anybody that's into EDC type stuff, you'll know that like you can buy a James brand knife for anybody that's a knife person, like a James brand knife that's like got the little, their logo on it, the little X, and then another company's logo on it because they made something together. Apparel that is, you know, a co-branded product. Beer, like if you're into the beer industry, like you'll know that tons of breweries come together and they brew a beer together, right? So that's something from day one when Matt and I started talking, I was like, I want to do co-branded products. I want us to work with another company and develop something together to like put a little bit of their style on it, put a little bit of our style on it, and kind of make this perfect product together. So the Sun hoodie is a co-branded product, and the jacket that we're currently working on is also a co-branded product. So we hope to have, not hope, we will have, those at Trail Days at both our booth, and I can't say who it is right now, but at the other company's booth as well, for people to check out, try on, look at the colorways, see if it's going to work for them. And then be able to sign up for the first drop, because we'll be doing a really big release of that product. We are crazy excited about it. If I could show it to you right now, I'd show it to you, but I technically can't show it to you yet. That being said, anybody that follows us over on Instagram, at Evolve Supply Co., this month we will be dropping the first big time reveal of that product. Which everything that I just said will make a lot of sense when you see the post that we're going to drop. It's kind of timed out right now. But if you go over there right now, you'll see like a photo of a bunch of little sample fabrics and little pieces of hardware and stuff like that we've been working on for quite a while. Super, super excited about that one. I know I am.
When you say jacket, am I allowed to ask like rain jacket, like puffy jacket? Or still TBD?
If you go look at that post on Instagram and you look at if you know anything about gear and you know anything about fabrics, if you really pay attention and look at what's in that photo, you can tell what jacket it is. You can tell what type of jacket it is. I would hope so.
Got it. Yeah. I'll do some sleuthing. Note to everybody else. Go to Instagram.
Yeah. And you know, I've been telling everybody, you know, all companies do this and it sounds like a plug, but a lot of the products that we're releasing, we want to release them to people that follow us first or people that are kind of a part of our culture that have already like got the Ranger that are maybe interested then in some of the other products that we're coming out with. So, you know, signing up on our website for the newsletter, like we don't send anything else out except for when we launch a product or when we drop something. Same thing on Instagram. Like we're putting all the teasers on there before the Ranger dropped. Like I was just randomly teasing the crap out of it on there. So anybody that's interested in that stuff that wants to get in on it when it does finally, you know, hit the finish line, like go follow us on Instagram, go sign up for our newsletter. And I shouldn't even say newsletter. It's more of like an announcement thing of like, oh, hey, this is coming out. This is dropping now. We're doing another pre-sale of this.
There's no spam, we promise.
No, not at all. I don't have time to send spam, so you're not getting spam. You're looking at the company right now. Like I don't have anybody sitting around like typing up like spammy emails to send people.
Yeah, we don't have the manpower for that.
No.
Cool. Well, I have more questions, but we've kind of run our time. So follow Evolve Supply Co., evolvesupplyco.com, at Evolve Supply Co. on Instagram. Also Trail Days, May 18th to the 21st, I believe. Yeah. Evolve Supply Co. will be there. Ripstop by the Roll will be there. It's going to be a good time. I'm really excited to see what you all bring. I mean, Appalachian Trail Days is always a great time. We're planning a lot of fun stuff. So if you want to interact with Evolve Supply Co., then definitely be there at the very least. But then, you know, there's a lot of cool people there. So again, so many questions, but until we have you on again or there's something else, it's been really, really fun. Matt, it's always great to have you on the pod and glad you're back. And Darwin, it's been really awesome to meet you
guys
and,
as well.
And chat about bikes and everything. And I'm glad that you're now like officially in the cottage and like fabric nerd business because it's a lot of fun.
It's funny.
And it's fun to, not that you haven't been.
Yeah, I was going to say, I always have been just behind the scenes. Now it's more like public.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I'm glad we can talk about it openly now, I guess. really cool. But thank you so much for sharing this time and spending, sharing this with our listeners. Really appreciate it, guys.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having.
Yeah. Thank you, guys.